Always Holding to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Tim Miller, John Curcio, Jazz at Maja, Chris Fuchs, Atif Sheik, Justin Maitner, Gavante Chillis, Molly Ficarella, Thomas Navin, Nathan McKenzie, Joe Mickendo, Trayvon Brady, Steve Rogers, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Adam Parker, Tom Gerke, and Eric Eels. Thank you so much to all these patrons, and you too can become a patron by visiting patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined by Mr. John Lee Brody. What's up, John?
What's going on, Zach? Thanks for having me back, man.
Absolutely, John. So you're on Shatter last season, you're on Run this season, man. You're getting some great episodes.
You are very accommodating because when we reviewed Shatter, I said, I'm calling dibs on season 4, episode 5, Run, which you are very graciously have given to me. So thank you for that.
Now, I remember when this episode first was promoted, right? And it was next week on Smallville, The Flash, right? They say The Flash, you see The Flash's like logo and name in the trailer, right? And, you know, they were a little presumptuous, the marketing department, because at the time they were keeping it really vague, right? Like mm-hmm. it's Bart Allen, right? Bart could be short for Barry, but there is a character in the comics named Impulse. That's his hero name. Mm-hmm. That came in I believe it was the mid-90s, and he's the Flash's grandson from the future. They got a couple lines of dialogue in here about that. They even have some Easter eggs about which Flash this is. So in this episode, they really play it like it could be any Flash, and they're like intentionally vague. But when you heard Smallville was going to have the Flash on, or a form of the Flash, what did you think?
You know, I was like, my first question was, are they really going to do this? Because when Smallville started, and also the state of the industry in terms of how superhero properties were made, my first question was, are they really going to do that? Because they were so adamant, Miles, you know, and Al, the creators of the show, were very adamant on no flights, no tights. So they were trying to not be, quote, comic booky. So I was like, are they really going to bring in Barry Allen? Is John Wesley Shipp going to be, you know, the person coming in?
That would have been something, right?
it would have been something. That's something that I wish would have happened, you know, throughout the series, but they made up for it this year on Elseworlds.
You just had to wait 15 years, John. That's all you had to do.
That's totally okay. It was worth the wait. So, that was only my only thought. And it was very exciting to me because, you know, as I rewatched this episode and got prepped for this podcast, I was just trying to put myself in the mindset of the year 2004. Which I believe is this episode came out. And, you know, at that time when, like I said, when comic book movies are coming out, like you had Bryan Singer's X-Men or Chris Nolan's Batman, which was very rooted in reality. It was almost like you couldn't be too comic booky. So I had a lot of concern. I was like, how are you going to have The Flash but not be comic booky? But from the opening scene, I was put at ease because with the dialogue and the way Bart enters the picture, you know, and then all, you know, him doing this thing, which we'll get into the episode, obviously, him doing this thing, you see that, oh, Clark's meeting someone that's can move like him, if not faster. And then going to the titles, I was like, okay, this episode's going to be awesome. So,
You mentioned John Wesley Shipp, and I love the original Flash show from 1990. I think that's still one of the best superhero shows, period. I think it really holds up, and I love John Wesley Shipp as the Flash, and I'm so glad they brought him back into the fold now for the new Flash. And so that's why, really, I'd say after Batman and Superman, or Superman and Batman, excuse me, got to get my order right, I would say The Flash is probably my third favorite DC Comics character for no other reason than, you know, I watched that show when I was a kid, and I loved it so much.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm right there with you. That show still holds up. I love that it's on the DCU app right mm-hmm. now. So, I mean, that, and I have the box set, you know, the DVD box set.
Yeah, same here, same here.
I have a VHS recording from when it was originally on the air because it was such a big deal when that show was on. And that's when I was really starting to understand comic books. You know, that was the year 1990. I was entering first grade, you know, and that was my thing. Cause you know, the first movie that I had memory of watching, which just celebrated its 40th anniversary, is the original Superman, the 1978 Superman, directed by Richard Donner and starring Christopher Reeve. And so the Flash is this, there was a lot of excitement going to this episode when it was originally coming on, and also a lot of concern. I was like, how are they going to do this? And boy, did they do it.
Yeah, say, totally. Say. Yeah, you mentioned having taped off TV. My parents, my whole family, we were VCR people back, and they always record like Star Trek off TV and stuff, right? So I have a few episodes of the original Flash still on tape as well. But I have the DVDs and I have the DCU app, so I love that as well. So yeah, the Flash, really, he's a founding member of the Justice League. It's a big deal. This is the first time Smallville brought on a hero, and this opened the door for many more heroes to come, as we'll talk about through the show, through the podcast here. But much like Smallville kind of spun out of a Bruce Wayne show that never happened, there was actually talk of a Flash show around this time. The WB at the time was considering a new live-action show based off The Flash, but to your point, they wanted to make it not comic booky. They wanted to make him a time-traveling college student from Gotham City, and he would basically have, like, much like in this episode, he'd have a backpack and, like, a lightning bolt on it, but that was it. And it's like, that is so far off in the mythos. Now, Stephen S. DeKnight, who wrote this episode...
It doesn't get much better than that, by the way, to have Stephen S. DeKnight write an episode of television, let alone Smallville.
Totally. By far, one of my favorite writers on Smallville, and the proof is in the pudding. He went on to great things with Daredevil and lots of other shows as well after the show. But they actually talked to him about the show, the WB, and he was like, yeah, that's not really what I'm looking for. So to quote Smallville, the official companion, season 4, by our friend Craig Byrne,
oh, gotta love Craig. Craig, shout out to Craig. I find any excuse possible to give Craig his due credit, because I feel like a lot of the things that we see on those clickbait articles, he's already said probably 3 hours beforehand and more articulately. I'm not gonna name, but I'm just saying, like, Craig gets things out there so fast and so accurately, and there's a reason why people like Stephen Amell and the Grant Gustins of the Arrowverse gravitate towards him, because they know he does good work and very objectively. So shout out to Craig. We can never get too much credit to Craig, right?
Absolutely. I love the scoops I get from Craig. That
he says it so casually, too. Like, he's about to pick up your dinner order or something. It's like, oh, did you know that this is going to happen? Like, dude, how are you going to say that?
So I was talking to Steven, you know, yesterday. Anyway.
Exactly.
But yeah, so in the companion, Craig had talked to Stephen S. DeKnight about this, and his take on that original Flash show was, quote, let's just say we had a creative difference about what a Flash series should be. So he turned that down. But DeKnight was a huge fan of The Flash, and he goes on to say, I grew up reading the classic Flash comics, and one of the things that I remember very fondly about my childhood back in the 60s was looking at the comics where The Flash and Superman would have these races. I knew going into this episode that, firstly, they had to have a race. That's just a classic thing. Secondly, The Flash is faster than Clark, than Superman. That's his one thing. And thirdly, that he's a smartass, quite frankly. I took a lot of inspiration from the Justice League animated show with the amazing Michael Rosenbaum as the voice of The Flash. And that's interesting crossover, too, because concurrently with Smallville, Michael Rosenbaum playing Lex Luthor in live action is voicing The Flash on the Justice League show, right? It's crazy.
He voiced Wally West, which is, that's the other kind of funny thing about Kyle Gellner, who is a really good friend of mine. And I think the way he portrayed it is, or the way it was written, it was almost like a juxtaposition of different Flashes. Maybe not as much Barry, but I felt like there's a lot. He definitely was Impulse, but also at the same time, he did kind of have a Wally West kind of smart-ass vibe about him. And I dug it. And and piggybacking off what you said about Rosenbaum, to have, technically, that's the first time we've had two Flashes collide, you know, before we had John Wesley Shipp and Grant Gustin in the now current Flash. So Smallville's an OG of a lot of things, that's sure. A lot of people know. If they don't, now they do.
Now you just can't talk about casually dropping names in. You casually dropped in your good friend with Kyle Gallagher.
Kyle is okay. So I was going to reveal this at the end of the podcast. I was trying very hard to get him to join us, so that's why I was being very specific about how we call in. He is unfortunately got a sick wife at home, so he is unable to join us. But he did offer me some insight into this episode that we can get into as we move on. He's actually got a couple funny stories and things that Rosenbaum told him. So, and he also sends his best and his apologies that he couldn't be on today. But Zach, I am going to make sure he's here for Justice, because we've been talking about that episode since we first, you know, had dialogue on Twitter. So when we get around to justice, I'll make sure Kyle's here.
There it is, guys. It is on the record now. Well, I appreciate that. Thank you for making the effort. And we hope his wife feels better and all that good stuff. And we really do appreciate you trying to make the connection. But we'll sync up down the line there, John. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I have some direct quotes. He texted me some stuff that I could share with you and all the listeners on the podcast.
Ooh, some Always Hole in the Smallville exclusives coming up for you guys. But let's get into it. Run.
Dude, you lost? You know, because I guess you must be, because this is my room.
Technically, it's my dad's, since you use his credit cards to pay for it.
I didn't take anything from anybody.
Nick saved the innocent act. I had a friend trace all the charges you're trying to stick on him after you stole his wallet.
And you went through my backpack. Man, that's an invasion of privacy, messing with my stuff.
Your stuff? You stole all this.
Yeah? Prove it.
I saw you save my dad from that truck this morning.
Man, nobody sees me when I'm doing my thing.
Maybe you're not the only one who can move like that. Jake Garrick, Barry Allen, Wally West, whatever your name really is.
It's Bart. Not that that matters, because I'll be 1,000 miles away before you can even blink.
I don't know, I can blink pretty fast.
Run is the 5th episode of Smallville's 4th season. It aired on October 20th, 2004, written by Stephen S. DeKnight and directed by David Barrett. Now, we talked briefly about Stephen DeKnight off the top. Mm-hmm. Really, he is really one of my favorite Smallville writers. This is his first episode that he's got a writer's credit on. He wrote this. He goes on to write Onyx this season, which is a great season 4 episode. Mortal in season 5. Also, Justice, you know, in mm-hmm. season 6, the big Justice League proto episode. So he's just a prolific Smallville writer, and it all started here, John.
It did. You know, and I had the pleasure of meeting Stephen S. DeKnight, I think maybe 4 years ago. And it was because the WGA does these things called like these workshops, and you kind of get assigned to who's going to be your guest speaker. You go to 3 different guest speakers, and one of mine was Stephen S. DeKnight. Of course, naturally, everything I asked about was Smallville, and he talked about kind of what we talked about in terms of, you know, at the beginning it was less comic booky, then as he started going forward, it became a little more. And then, of course, in the later years when Jeff Johns came on, it became very much so, leading to the way to the Arrowverse. So I'm a huge fan of Stephen S. DeKnight as well. I mean, he comes to the school of Joss Whedon, and it doesn't get much better than that in television either. So, you know, when I heard that he was writing this episode, and, you know, I was like, okay, we're in good hands, but I'm still really nervous. How is this going to look?
So we do get our point of view character from the beginning is Bart Allen, the Flash here, right? He shows up and he shows up and it's this like seedy back garage, right? And it turns out, you know, he's a pickpocket here. He's gotten wrapped up with some criminals here, trading, obviously, you know, stealing some watches and all the kinds of things you'd see off pickpockets. So this is a kind of a unique take on the Flash, obviously, but Smallville has its own twist on a lot of characters. So what'd you think of this for the Flash, John?
Yeah, it's funny. Their own twist, or an Oliver twist, as you might say, because he's almost like he's almost like the Artful Dodger, but with superpowers. You know, and I was totally on board with it because of the way he was presented. Because anytime you give like an air of mystery, you know, I'm big on opening image and just kind of mystery boxes. As you can tell, I'm a big Spielberg, J.J. Abrams fan because they're big on mystery boxes. My mentor James Wan as well, name drop. just they're kind of like, he's late, and all of a sudden you just hear the first line. Your watch is fast. If there's anything I am, it's never late. You see, I'm going to be somewhere, I'll be there like a flash. And I'm paraphrasing. Apology if I didn't get it.
Yeah, that's pretty much verbatim, John. Well done. I'm impressed.
From that dialogue alone, I said, I'm in. However you're presenting this character, I forgot all the promos at that point. I said, I'm 100% sold. Like, I love the fact that this is like kind of a young kid. And just the dialogue alone, it's like it lends itself to like the comic bookness. And I was like, okay, cool. I think maybe we're seeing a shift in the mentality of how these characters can be presented. And that was exciting to me.
Yeah, you know, he's wearing his backpack. It's got a Flash lightning bolt on it, which was, that was cool. I like that. And he's wearing it in red and yellow. But you know what? At that point, it's fine because he's not the Flash yet. He's like Clark, or he's not Superman yet. Like, don't give me a Flash TV show where he's running around in a sweatsuit and a backpack. But for a young kid who's going to grow up to be the Flash, that's totally cool.
Or if he really is Bart from the future, then the Flash would have existed, so he could have gotten at the Flash Museum, and maybe he did come back in time. You never know. I don't think they ever went that route, but that's me just thinking all angles of why he would have, or it's just a coincidence.
They keep it all vague enough, right? Where you can, there's lots of fan theories you can go either way, and I like that. Yeah, I like that. So he's bargaining with these guys here, and they don't want to deal with him anymore. They want a real score. You know, they treat him like a kid and tell him to buzz off. And he gives him like $200 for all this stuff. He's like, come on, man, it's worth 10 times that. So luckily for Bart, there's like a cat distracts the guys, so he decides to take the money and the goods and run off. And so he's on these guys, you know, bad list now. So you got to watch out for these guys. So put a pin in these guys. We'll meet them again later in the episode. And then we cut to Clark and Jonathan. They're leaving the doctor's office. Jonathan had his heart checkup in Metropolis, and we have some exposition about like why, you know, that's the thing, right? This is episodic, but it's also like sort of story arc based Smallville, right? So that in between between episodic, everything leads into the other, and everything's independent. So you hear some exposition.
Yeah, especially at this point of Smallville, because when it started out, as we all know, it was almost like a Monster of the Week procedural, where there was some connective tissue, but I felt like it became more serialized. Season 3 a little bit, but especially season 4, it started to become more of a serialized kind of superhero show. So yeah, you nailed it on the head by saying that.
Yeah, so it's funny because you're like, yeah, I know this already. I just binged the last four episodes. But you got to think, put yourself back in 2004. Not everybody's seen every episode, right? So we get exposition of Jonathan has a heart problem. He got it because he got powers from Jor-El. It's Clark's fault. Don't blame yourself. You know, all this kind of stuff. But then it turns out they also have tickets to the Metropolis Sharks game. So they're going to the football game. You know, I made a note that when Clark was imagining himself as a quarterback a couple episodes ago, the announcer was like, the Metropolis Meteors. I was like, whoa, where'd that come from? The Meteors is the baseball team. Somebody read the wrong sport in that script. It's the Sharks, which had been established on Smallville before. Anyway, just had to say that. Moving on.
Well, I think what it was that Clark was picturing himself as a two-sport athlete, like a Bo Jackson or a Deion Sanders. So he's probably playing football and baseball. He got mixed up in his mind. He's like, oh, wait, my own fantasy got mixed up because I forgot I played baseball and football in my perfect world. So I think that's what happened, you know, because Bo knows and so does Clark. Bo, so that's what we're doing.
Bo knows. Did you ever see the episode of Lois and Clark?
Absolutely. That's one of my favorite cold opens of television ever. And then Bo goes, Bo don't know that.
Bo don't know that.
Like, you know what? Yo, you just found Bo Jackson's limit because that dude was as close as it gets to a realized superhero. So that's, and then of course our buddy Craig Byrne covered that show as well. Of course he did, because Craig covers everything.
It all ties together, John. Well done. Well done. So yeah. I love it. I love it. So Clark tells his dad, like, yeah, I just, you know, it's senior year. I don't want to worry about Jor-El or any of this stuff. I just want to play football and have a good time. So,
or then my coach looks like Dean Winchester. I'm like, what's going on here? You know,
again, it's all connected, right?
So it is, man.
So Clark goes around to like get their car, and Jonathan's just hanging out on the street there. But we see a very blatant drunk driver. You know, guy's just drinking a beer, falling asleep at the wheel, loses control of the car, and almost hits Jonathan. But Jonathan saved, isn't he, John?
He is, but dun dun dun. It's not by Clark. You know, it's by some other mysterious dude that can move very, very fast. And we're like, oh, okay, it is the Flash. Or is it? I don't know. We still don't really know at this point.
We're still not sure. We're still not sure. But he's like, oh, it wasn't me. You know, because his Jonathan's like, oh, Clark, if you wouldn't push me out of the way, I wouldn't hit by that car. He's like, it wasn't me. He's like, well, not only did he save me, he took my wallet. So, somebody save me, right? That's the big reveal that he's a pickpocket there. And again, you're talking about the personality of the Flasher. Kyle Gardner does a great job, because you see this kid is different than Clark, and that's established from the jump, and that's very important for the rest of the episode, I think.
Absolutely. And that's something that I feel like we're going to touch on a lot, and we'll touch on more as, you know, we get more of the story points of the episode. But this is to me, this is a very important episode character-wise, but also I think just overall, because it was starting that shift into the more comic bookiness, and it showed that you can have a show, you know, that's relatable, but also you can have it suspending disbelief. And I feel like this episode is very important for many reasons, and that being one of them.
Absolutely. You know, this episode also does a great job of making you feel sorry for Jonathan, right? Because they go home, right? Because he got his wallet stolen. They can't go to the football game because the tickets are in the wallet, right? So they already can't do that. Jonathan wants to, like, you know, call the cops and all that, and Clark's like, oh, no, wait, let me call Chloe. She can probably track down who used your cards. By the way, that's a plus one for Chloe's unseen connections for the tally board. We'll get to that at the end. But Jonathan gives him the day. Yeah, we keep a track of that, right? Jonathan gives him the day to do that. So Clark runs off to go investigate. And Jonathan's like, hey, Martha, I was thinking we could spend the night together and all this stuff. And Martha's like, oh, sorry. I got to go to the Talon. So again, Jonathan gets a bad day. And this is like a bad day for Jonathan. Well, to this episode, he keeps trying to hang out with his wife and his son, and they got other things to do. And it just makes me laugh because it's like this subtle, funny subplot of the episode, I thought.
Yeah, I remember once the heart problem thing happened, you know, yourself and myself, you know, we and a lot of people, we grew up with the 1978 Richard Donner Superman. So we know this is ultimately coming. And then once that kind of was, you know, brought upon us, it's like, oh no, now we're like, it's almost like a ticking time bomb. Like, when's it going to happen? And I remember always kind of being on edge, like, is this the episode where Jonathan's heart gives out? And so that's another important thing, because now there's, you know, we don't know how much longer Jonathan Kent's going to be around. And we being us, the viewers, and also Clark and Martha, you know, are not sure. And that's also touched upon in the episode. Lana, of course, being the voice of reason, spoiler alert, but this is really spoiler alert if it's, this thing's been out for, you know, 14 years.
I think I spoiled the like series finale in almost every episode, John, so it's all good, right? So it's a retrospective podcast, people.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you know, that's you know, a lot of cool things happening in this episode, and that's hats off to, you know, like I said, we talked about it at the top of the podcast, Stephen S. DeKnight. It doesn't get a lot better than that when it comes to really anything, you know.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you say that, but then we get our next scene, and after a much too long makeout session between Lana and Jason, which is, you can tell it's season four.
It's funny watching it in retrospect, because at the time I was thinking, oh, there's the guy from Dark Angel. Or, you know, there's the guy who was Eric Brady on Days of Our Lives. I mean, that's what I'm – and now I'm like, hey, man, that guy looks like Dean Winchester. Oh, it is. Yes. You kind of forget the Jensen Ackles era of Smallville.
Well, yeah, it's crazy because he was on Smallville for one season out of 10. And he went on to be in Supernatural 14 seasons and counting. So good for Jensen Ackles is all I say.
Hey, good for anybody making TV money. Let's just say that. Any actors out there, you are a winner if you have an episodic fee, you know, meaning like you're a series regular, and that means that whether you're working one day or all 8 days, you're getting that fee. Whereas if you're a guest star, you know, you want to work more days, you know, where there's times where I was a guest star, supposed to be a 3-day thing, it turned into a 5-day thing, and it, you know, doubled my pay basically. So just an FYI for anyone who's savvy with the business, you know, once you have that, once I realized like, oh, Jensen Ackles is a series regular. Anytime I see someone get bumped to series regular, I'm like, oh wow, that's a whole different pay grade. And now he's 300 episodes of Supernatural. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, syndication, DVD. I mean, he's got to be raking it in. But good for him. By all accounts, he seems to be a great guy from all I've heard. So good on him. But here he's Lana's boyfriend of the season, right? So we're not so we're not supposed to like him. But I will say, I do enjoy the Jason T character, like just his personality in the first half of season four, when he's just kind of a goofball. Like, I think he's fun to watch. It's kind of actually enjoyable to see their interactions, I think.
I think so too. And I feel like I always like when they, you know, bring in, I don't want to call it a one-off, but when they bring in these series regulars and they're only for one season, it brings a nice energy to the show that otherwise wasn't there. So I enjoyed his character, you know, and I always liked Jensen as an actor. Even, you know, my first exposure to him was during sick days from school, you know, and there's nothing on but soaps. And I remember watching Days of Our Lives, and I just said to myself, like, you know, even at a young age, I'm like, oh, I think that guy's going to be a star. And, you know, so, I mean, Jensen Ackles, I predicted your success before you even knew it. Just well, if
you... you look at him, you look at Justin Hartley, also did a lot of soap opera work as well. So.
They didn't, you know, that lends itself very well to this world, because anyone who works in daytime dramas, you know, they shoot 40, 50 pages a day. And that's not an exaggeration. They shoot super, super fast. So they have to memorize their lines just like, you know, instantaneously. And whereas you're going to shooting maybe, you know, 3 to 4 pages in a day, you know, 3, 4, 5, you know, maybe 10 pages, you know, on a good day. On a show like this, it's a breeze for them. So it's good on them. Good on those guys.
This is why I love talking to you, John. You bring that. You work in the industry. You have such insight into these things. So it's great to get your two cents on this stuff. So.
I appreciate it. I'm glad you like it. And you're not like, man, this is boring. Let's talk about the show. This is what you're doing. I keep waiting for that.
I talk about Smallville every week, so you know the different flavors of it are all good by me. So
absolutely.
So this scene, by the way, Jason Teague has like the nicest dorm room ever at Central Kansas A&M. He has a fireplace in his dorm room. You notice this?
You know, I have seen that before because I had a buddy named Richard who went to Harvard. His dorm room had his freshman year dorm room had a fireplace in it. I'm like, damn, I should have studied a lot harder. In my day, I was like, if this is what the reward is. So, I mean, it's not completely unbelievable that he would have a fire. But, yeah, you're right. That he's got basically like a duplex, but he owns the whole duplex as his own dorm room. Or he just owns the whole dorm. I don't know what's going on. But, yeah, you're right.
So, they're, you know, having a little makeout session here, right? And then we see he sees Lana's tattoo for the first time, right? And in retrospect, you're like, does he really not know about this? Did he play in her getting this? Probably, but you know, who knows? But at this point, we have no reason to suspect him for anything. So he's like, well, it's funny because he treats it normally, and she's so defensive about it. He's like, whoa, I don't care about the tattoo. I just think it's weird that you made it a point not to tell me. And what's interesting to me here about Lana is that she has become Clark now. Right, because she's like keeping secrets from people she's in relationships with, because she doesn't want them to get hurt or all that. So I thought that was an interesting twist for her now to like be in Clark's shoes, where he usually is in relationships, huh?
Yeah, 100%. And you know, the comedic side of me has to wonder. Wait, this is the first time you're noticing her tattoo. Like, you haven't gotten gotten to second base or nothing, man? Like, how is this the first time you've seen a tattoo? It's like, it's not like it's that hidden. It's like, y'all didn't go swimming or nothing. Come on.
Totally, right? Come on, right? It's on your back, not like, anyway, there are other places it could be that might be a little more questionable, but moving on.
Exactly. Moving on. But the tattoo, mysterious, what's going on here?
Yeah, we got to keep that thread going, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So then we have a scene with Lex, and it's very interesting. He has no dialogue, but he opens up this crate. It looks like it's from, like, Russia or something, and it's this like manuscript looking thing, and it's like medieval times, Middle Ages, and he has just kind of this ominous smile, and you're like, all right, this is definitely gonna play in this episode at some point, right?
Yeah. We're starting to see the shift, and we're gonna circle back to what you just said about Lana almost becoming Clark. I mean, we're gonna, you know, come to discuss that it's a similar thing with Lex, and we're starting to see kind of the division between the two. You know, like, they're still friends, but it's kind of true almost. You're starting to see the friendship slowly dwindle and unfold, you know, and come apart a little bit. So I feel like this was almost like a catalyst towards pushing it towards that, you know.
Oh, definitely. That's a great subplot in subsode two, because Lex and Clark are kind of rebuilding their friendship, but they're just doing the same old stuff they've always been doing, right? But anyway, we get Clark. He's gone to investigate Bart here, as we find out his name is. And we have, now this is a category that I've added for season four, John, because I've heard the term, the term I'm going to start using, it's kind of thirsty, is the term that we came up with last episode. It's a little more okay. Raunchy, a little more risque in season four. There's been a shower scene in almost every episode, right? And although we don't see Bart in the shower, he's in the shower, he comes out in the robe. I'm making a point here about season four. I'm going to call it a shower scene. So we have a plus one for a season four shower scene. All right. And we'll see if we have enough to cover every single episode of season four. So far, we do. Clark starts going through all his stuff because he's in the shower. So he has an opportunity to do this. And he finds his dad's wallet. Then he finds these IDs. And I'll take a screenshot of this and post it on social media. But we see, as Clark mentions in a second, we see the names of other Flashes, right? So we'll bring that up in a second here. But Bart comes out of the shower. He's like, hey, bro, what are you doing? You know, and immediately they have a great chemistry, I think, in this scene.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just right away, because Bart's very in your face. And then Clark's he's the farm boy. He's the charming, you know, he's the Boy Scout, you know, and to have those two come to head, seeing that contrast was very, very fun for sure.
Yeah. And they clearly he's stolen all this stuff, right? Because whenever you see a pile of watches and bracelets and wallets, you know what's up, right? So Clark's like, look, I don't know what you call yourself, Jay Garrick, Barry Allen, Wally West, and so you're like, as a comic fan, like, I know what that is, right?
Again, like that dialogue there, you know, that little bit there is, you know, hats off to Stephen DeKnight. You know, because knowing that he's like a true comic book, but you know, having that kind of dialogue, I don't even know if that might have happened in the early seasons, but having it happen now, like, you know, with the visuals of the Flash and throwing those Easter eggs in, like, we started to get that shift towards where, you know, of like a more comic booky show. So that was like every time, like, it feels like Stephen almost strategically planted these little moments, like the opening line and this Easter egg here, and then what we're about to see. After this whole conversation, it's just like, you know, the episode just keeps you on your toes for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like I like what you said about maybe he took him from the future, from the Flash Museum. I never really thought about that before.
Sure.
So that's really cool. I like that. You know, Clark starts, you know, asserting himself in the situation, and Bart's not having it. He's like, I'll be gone before you can even blink. And Clark says, I don't know, I can blink pretty fast. And we have our first Smallville Flash Superman race, and it's great. They take off together, and Clark is so used to being faster than everyone. And I like what Stephen Knight, as he established, talking in the companion earlier, like the Flash is faster than Superman because it's the Flash's one thing. And if the Flash is not faster than Superman, then what is the point? You know, so give him his one thing, right? And he takes off, and Clark almost catches him, but then he takes off over the water, which is like, whoa, this guy's on a whole new level of speed, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, on like a technical side of it, because being someone who I own a post-production company, I do a lot of visual effects. I mean, I got to give shout out to and kudos to Matt Beck, who is the visual effects supervisor on this episode. And also I think over 90 episodes of Smallville, you know, it's hard enough to do visual effects on a feature film when you may have months to do it, let alone on a television series where they have 8 days to film and you have a very limited time to do these shots. And it looked like the effects still hold up. I mean, I was rewatching the episode yesterday, just kind of get another refresher on it. I'm like, these effects still look really good. And this is back in 2004. And like now I feel like an effect like that would probably take hours, but that an effect like that would take days, back in 2004. So it's kind of nuts how far we come along, but also how it holds up.
Now, speaking of super speed effect, another thing I appreciated was the fact that he had a different looking speed effect than Clark. You know, because his powers are different. He's faster. He got them differently. So it would have been really easy for them, talking about special effects, to just kind of like run the Clark algorithm, right, on Bart.
But, exactly.
But you see, like, there's like a flame and a cutout. Like it's just, it's very distinct. And that's a great attention to detail and for them going above and beyond like that.
100%. And also great strategic product placement with seeing the nut close with the Nikes on the water, you know, taking off. Just right across, and I think it was really cool to see Clark's reaction of holy crap, I have never seen anything like this before, and let alone someone faster than me. And again, this comes back to the importance of us shifting towards a new kind of phase of where Smallville's going to go. And then where do they go from there, Zach?
They go to the Kent Farm, and Clark runs home. He's like, "Hey, Dad!" I find he's like, "He's already here, son." You know, so he comes home to tell his dad about the guy. He's like, "Oh, this guy, he just took off across the harbor." But Bart has already made himself at home. He's chilling out, drinking some OJ, and his dad's already making him a bed on the couch. So yeah, Clark, you have a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah, and it's like, wait, did you just jog back, man? I mean, or is he that much faster than you? I don't know, but probably a mix of both.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. I thought he saw Bart get away. He's like, okay, well, I guess I don't need a super speed home because he's obviously not going to go there. But, you know, again, good writing. He stole his wallet, so he has his address, so he knows where they live. So that's where he went. So good on them there. And also, you know, what took you so long, right? The Flash always giving people crap about being slower than him. There's a great little moment. So many great moments here.
And a great cut to commercial break. I remember that going to commercial break when watching this live on the air in October of 2004, like it was yesterday.
So we come back from commercial, and we get Clark and Bart in the bar and in the loft, and Clark's like, "Well, what's the deal here? What did you tell my dad to make him, you know, let you spend the night or whatever?"
But also Bart says, I'm sure you're getting to this, so I'm sorry if I cut you off from your but Bart also has the money line.
Fastest man alive.
Yep, yes. Right there. He's like, "You're right on my butt, but fastest man alive," right? I'm like, there it is again.
Had to work those in.
Absolutely. And I was like, I love that. And I was like, you know, it's like, this is the show. This is, I wish every episode was like this, but, and then,
totally. So, and then we find out the reason why, because it was kind of jarring. You're like, wait, Jonathan knows the guy that stole his wallet is this dude, and he's like making him a bed and making him food or whatever. But we find out that, you know, Clark's like, hey, what happened here? How'd you convince my dad? He explains that, you know, he got zapped by a big bolt of light. And it's, they keep it so vague again, right? This could be any Flash's origin. Mm-hmm. So again, very smart. Very, except for Jake Garrick, who I believe inhaled fumes of heavy water, I believe it was, for Jake Garrick back in the day. But anyway, we know this isn't Jake Garrick. So he did that, and then his parents kind of freaked out, right? Which is an understandable fear. We've seen that on Smallville before, right? A young person gets powers. Their parents don't know how to handle it. Not everyone is the Kents, right? Clark is blessed with having the Kents as parents. So Bart just ran away from home and then started to live on the street.
Yeah, and it's also important to note that Clark asked him, this happened to Smallville. He's like, no. He's like, this is the first time I've been here. So I think that's an important thing where there are, like, Clark is now knowing there are metahumans outside of Smallville that have nothing to do with meteor rocks. And that's an eye-opening thing for him. And also, and like, it's an exciting thing for viewers. Cause like, ooh, we're getting the Flash. Are we going to get this person now? Because now we're establishing that there's others out there in the universe. So that was exciting.
Absolutely. You know, it really is game-changing for the show and the universe of the show. And Clark, and this is when he really starts to be like a mentor figure for Bart, because Bart basically says, oh, you know, I'm a have-not, and I steal from the haves. And he's like, oh, like my dad? And then Bart's mm-hmm. like, come on, bro, they don't charge you if your card's stolen. And Clark's like, and that makes it okay? So, mm-hmm. you know, this ideological difference between them is what drives most of the episode.
Yeah, and it's just like Clark's all about, he's like, this is what's right. This, and that's why, you know, ultimately he becomes Superman and, you know, becomes like that person for the Justice League down the line, because he is about what's right. He's like, yeah, I know technically, you know, and could justify the means, but that's not the way you should do it. If you can go this way, you should go this way, because that's the right thing to do. And when Bart's like, hey, man, it's just easier if I do this, you know, and it's all going to be fine either way. And it's seeing those differing points of view just on how they view just life in general, but also their powers even. What that was so much fun to see throughout the episode.
These are the kind of interactions you want to see between heroes. Like, that's why stuff like the Avengers and all that is so popular and so mm-hmm. successful, because you establish people's personalities and the way they use their superpowers, and of course they're all going to come into conflict with each other. They're not going to be like, oh great, we're all mm-hmm. friends now because we're all special. No, it's not like that. Not at all.
Exactly.
So Bart, he decides to investigate Clark's life, and I love that he does a quick buzz around the loft, and we see the super speed effect, and then he basically lists off all the stuff to Clark, like you like reading about Native American art, and you scribble Lana into all your journals, which is so Clark, right? So it's funny, and then it takes a dark turn, because he's like, and you collect rocks? And Clark's like, I don't collect rocks. And then as he's saying that, Bart opens up the kryptonite that they keep up there in the lead box, and that's a great way to set up later in the episode how Bart mm-hmm. knows his weakness, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, I mean, it's just Bart's almost, he's as much an investigative reporter as Clark Kent will be almost, you know, but in a matter of seconds, you know, and less mild-mannered, for sure.
For sure. And then Clark has the line where, I'm allergic. He always says that about the meteor rocks. I always find that funny. Like, I don't know how I would, I guess that's the best way to describe it, I guess. I mean, he doesn't know, you know, how better to explain it to people.
I loved Bart's reaction where he's like, I heard people getting sniffly around cats, but not around rocks. Like, what are you talking about? And I think that reaction, you know, is almost a representation of how we feel. Like, really? Allergic? That's what you're going to go with? So, I mean, I feel like that served a dual purpose in the episode by saying that.
So then we get to the Talon, and it's the grand reopening. That's what's keeping Martha so busy, right? Because she's the new manager of the Talon. Clark, but before this, Clark and Bart had decided to run to Florida. You know, he's like, ever been to Florida? And Clark follows him. And so they come back. We don't get to see that adventure. Have a web comic about that. I want to see the Bart Chronicles or something, right?
So yeah.
So they come back to this grand opening, and they're talking about, oh man, that girl was totally checking you out. She got her number. And Clark's like, nah, I'm just going to walk up to somebody and do that. He's like, yeah, but I am. And he got the number for him, which is great. Again, showing how different they are.
But also Bart was showing, you know, you see a little bit of in Clark when he's like, you ever been to Miami? Where Bart's showing him like, hey, you know, you can have fun with this too. It's not always it's not a burden. You know, you can have fun with these powers. And I think it was important for Clark to see that, in the sense of not so much that he should do what Bart's doing, but yeah, I can go this route, but I'm, you know, it, what makes him Superman is he chooses not to abuse his power, you know.
Exactly. It's how he chooses to use his powers. That's what makes him Superman. And again, but like you said, it's a great point. That's the episode saying to Clark, it's like, hey, you can go like run to Miami and run back. Well, why not?
Because he can. Right? He can do it before anybody. Like it's dinner time, you know, at the Kent house, which is a crazy thought. You know?
So as they're having their conversation here, he swipes a cookie. Right, again, we got to continue you can take the kid off the streets, but you can't take the street out of the kid, I guess. And Chloe comes in, and this is a great. I love the chemistry here between them, and because this is where we get her line, where she's like, "Hey, he's like, where'd your friend come from?" He's like, "The future." He's like, "What's your favorite flower?" And he goes and gets her favorite flower, and they kind of have some sparks here, which is it's nice to see Chloe get some love on the show, right?
It is because she's glossed over many times. She's always she's very much the almost but not quite. And in this case, she was the center of attention for Bart, who says he's from the future, which in the comics, Bart Allen is from the 31st century. So maybe what I said at the top of the podcast isn't too much out there. You never know.
So they're kind of distracted over there. Martha, who's of course running the place, talks to Clark, and she says that Lex wanted Clark to stop by. There's something very important he wanted to come see. So Clark leaves Bart and McCloy's capable hands and goes on his business. And then Lex shows Clark the artwork that he had just acquired. And it has Kryptonian symbols, you know, as far as Lex knows, Kawachi symbols, on the border, right? And Clark says, I thought you were going to stop looking into this stuff. And Lex says, oh, I'm still interested, just not obsessed. I love that distinction he makes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was an interesting scene to me because you clearly see that Lex has a motive, and then of course Clark, taking a closer look, realizes what he's really looking at. It's like they're there and they're trying to be amicable, but you can clearly see the division between the two. It's not like the friendship they had in season one, you know, where I feel like they're friendly. I don't really think they're friends here, and that's kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is. It's like once that trust has been broken, it's hard for them to rebuild it. Especially when they're up to their same act, and they both know something the other one doesn't know. But this is kind of a classic Smallville Clark and Lex scene, because Clark's like, "What's this?" And Lex goes on some 5-minute monologue about, you know, its historical significance, right?
Yeah, that's this. I was making this joke to somebody the other day, and I'm like, and I'm gonna tell Rosenbaum this next time I see him. I was like, bro. You realize every time someone asks you a yes or no question on Smallville, like, you know, hey, do you want sugar in your coffee? Did you know that the ancient Romans didn't believe in sugar because they felt that before battle, it would probably weaken them? So they chose not to drink coffee. They just had to go on their pure adrenaline. Like, it was like, but the fact, you know, the hats off to Michael, because they gave him some ridiculous lines of dialogue in this show. And he made it work. And he made it look easy. And I feel like I think a lot of times it's taken for granted, or because when actors make something look easy, they think it's easy. But it's, you give me that line of dialogue, I'm not going to know what to do with it. I'm like, you want me to talk about ancient Rome when they just asked me about like sugar my coffee? Like, but he made it work. So kudos to Rosenbaum, as always.
Totally. And, you know, during this monologue, right, Clark is just zoned out because he's, you know, he's whatever, right? But he's used his X-ray vision on the map. And he sees there's a map under the map, and you're like, wait a minute, why would he do that? But later on, you understand why he did it. So again, it's good writing, right? The script answers questions you didn't even know you wanted to ask, right? So again, Steven S. DeKnight at work here, people. But Lex has an appointment he has to get to late at night, so he excuses himself, and Clark excuses himself. But then Bart shows up at Luther Mansion. He's like, bro, you know Lex Luthor? Like, that would be a normal person's reaction to finding out Clark is friends with Lex Luthor, right?
Yeah, and also, because that would be my reaction if I had just met him. But also, what was important here, and I think, again, this is a nod to the writing and also the production overall, where Clark's like, wait, you were just in there? He's like, yeah, I just took a quick look around. And they didn't even have to use the VFX. It's just they sold it because, and the fact that we're in there with Clark, and so we're kind of seeing what he sees, which or not seeing, which wasn't Bart. So that just goes to show how fast Bart really is. And that's also setting up, you know, future stuff too. So I thought, like, again, like the writing just super tight and solid in this episode. And that could have easily become, you know, like maybe a cheesy VFX or something. But instead they chose to sell it with dialogue where Clark's like, wait, you were just in there? Yeah. What? And then that gives us something to think about.
And then he also said, like, Chloe shot me down. Her loss. Like,
yeah, and again, Chloe got to shoot somebody down, which I think is pretty funny, you know?
Nice, yeah. The tables have turned for a change for her. That's nice.
But then, at least for one episode.
Right, for one episode. So they're out there talking in the hallway, and Lex, of course, comes out. It's like, Clark, who are you talking to? And Clark's like, he has no answer. He doesn't even attempt to answer.
You know, he should learn by now just to be like, have his cell phone there. Just like, oh, I was talking to my dad on the phone or something. You know, I was like, come on, Clark. I
mean, this is season 4. Get some better excuses, right? Totally.
Yeah. I mean, come on, man. I was like, you're a senior in high school. You know, you're a quarterback. I mean, think of something.
So he goes home to tell his dad. This scene right here, this cements the whole Jonathan subplot I was talking about. It just makes me laugh. He's like, hey, Clark, your mom's working late, so I just figured we'd have a boys' night. You can watch the game. And I get Clark's like, shuts him down entirely. Because he's like, I just went back from Lex's. He has an artifact with some Gertonian symbols on it. It said to look deeper, and that's why he used the X-ray vision. So I think that was really clever they brought that up. So I used my X-ray vision on it. There's a map. He doesn't know what he has. And Jonathan's just like, I thought you didn't want to do any of this stuff. He's like, well, Dad, this is really important. And it's funny to see Jonathan just trying to be normal and do what Clark wanted to do earlier. But now Clark's 100% back on the, you know, mystical sci-fi supernatural stuff he's been doing. But he does mention that being with Bart reminded him that he's not normal. And I thought that was, again, a good way to answer why he would have changed his opinion so quickly in this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's just, you know, people can make a drinking game out of our episode because we're going to be like, it's back to the writing. But it is. I mean, just the way this script was so tightly written and the way it was executed, it doesn't come together just because it was written that way. It's like it all really unfolded. And that's how, you know, that's how writing should be. It's not always that way, but in this case it was.
Yeah, it's not always, it's definitely not always that way on Smallville. In this case it is. We love the show, but we love pointing stuff out too. So Clark runs into Bart again and he's on his way out. He's like, look, I have to go do something personal. We can hang out later. And Bart's like, oh, great, they're showing Speed at a man's Chinese theater. Now, that's, of course, the famous Chinese theater in Hollywood Boulevard, which is awesome. Of course, his favorite movie is Speed, right? I thought that was a great moment.
Oh, and that's a great movie. I mean, I was like, I like this kid. And I really, you know, hats off to Kyle Gellner, who was, he was 17 when he filmed this. He was a minor. So, I mean, him as a 17-year-old coming onto a hit show, at this point, I'd say it was a hit show on television. And to be with like Tom Welling, and you know, when you're a guest star on a show, it's tough. You know, it's tough because you don't have the advantage that the series regulars do, especially when it comes into season 4. They know the beats of the show. They know each other. They know each other's timing. They know how the DP wants to do set up shots. They know it all. And you're really going in, you know, just kind of in the dark. And for someone like Kyle to come in at the tender age of 17. You know, be playing a pretty iconic character, whether what interpretation of the character it is anyone's best guess, you know, still. But to do that and hold your own against, you know, the star of the show, I mean, it's just like, there's a lot to be said about that.
Well, first of all, I didn't realize he was that young. I mean, he looks young, but wow, 17. Awesome. He a true teenager on Smallville. That's a rarity.
He really was Kid Flash, you know, on Smallville. So I think that's pretty cool. I think he turned 18 2 days before the episode actually aired. So he was definitely, he couldn't even, you know, buy cigarettes or anything, while he was filming. Not that he would want to, but he couldn't.
Right. No, and, you know, speaking of his performance, you're like, he has a lot of scenes. This isn't like a guest star who's like in a handful. Like he is in the majority of the episode. And if he didn't bring it the way he brought it, the episode would not work. And he totally brings it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, this going back to like pay grade, and, you know, payment and everything. He probably worked close to all days on the show, which means the payday was probably pretty generous. So if you're a guest star, always hope for more days. I know that it gets exhausting, but if you're a guest star, you want all the days possible. So just take it in stride.
Always hold on to Smallville and always hold for more days. Life lessons.
When you're a guest star. Right? Now, when you're a series regular, then you shoot.
You want less days.
Kidding. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not
going to. Clark's about to, you know, he's going to go off and he wants to get a better look at the map and kind of draw. He gets paper and pen. He's going to draw it, which is pretty smart, I think, because it's not like you can take an iPhone picture. Not that they had iPhones back then, but with your X-ray vision, there's really no other way to capture that. So, of course, he has to draw it. But before he goes, Bart's going to give him a present. It's an MP3 player, which, of course, dates the show in its own way.
Absolutely. An MP3 player. That made me laugh. And it wasn't even an iPod or a Zune. I don't even know what it was. It was one of those, because back in the day, for those of you who are younger, that was a thing where it was iPod and the Zune. It was really the iPod, to be fair. The Zune was Microsoft's attempt to have an MP3 player. It didn't go over well because Apple ruled the world in that sense. It still pretty much does.
Still does, yeah.
But there were all these other types of, quote, MP3 players that you can get from like a 7-Eleven or a Best Buy. It was really comical. So he got him like a generic MP3 player. They probably couldn't get the right, which doesn't make sense because Lex has an Apple Mac, like a laptop in his office. So I'm like, they couldn't get like an Apple iPod or something. I mean, they're in season 4. That's the kind of stuff that makes me laugh, you know.
They're using brand X.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, you know what? They're using brand. You're talking about the brand X and talking. Let me tell you something about brand X. He doesn't look very happy.
So Clark quickly realizes, like, hey, where'd this come from? And Bart's like, yeah, it doesn't matter where it came from. He's like, it does. You know, you haven't been listening to anything I've been trying to teach you this entire time. You know, and like, again, it's the conflict of their philosophies. Bart's like, look, man, like, it's just stuff, the rules don't apply to us. And Clark's like, yes, they do. So unfortunately, you know, it takes a quick turn. And Bart runs off, because he figures that, you know, Clark and him aren't alike after all. You know, and it's a sad moment. It's an angry moment, but it's a necessary one for the next step of the episode.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, that's where you kind of see the division between these two. But it's different points of view, you know, or to quote Obi-Wan Kenobi, a certain point of view.
There it
you
is.
Know, I know, got to get a Star Wars reference in there somewhere, which there's plenty of those throughout the course of Smallville, as we all know. It's an important thing for Clark to see that not everyone is going to, you know, take on what he's taken on, where I choose to use my powers only for good, for this. I'm not going to use it to get the latest thing I want, even though he did when he was on Red Kryptonite, but, you know, that doesn't really count. Or does
it? That's interesting, because I think Bart's pretty much living the life that Clark was when he was Cal, when he's on the Red Kryptonite.
Yeah, and I think he sees that, and it's a scary thing to him, because, you know, when he was Cal, he was, you know, the first time around, before he became, quote, Cal, you know, he was just basically maxing out his parents' credit cards and going to these clubs and getting in fights with Lana over and over again, you know, because that's what he did. And then when he was Cal, you know, he's robbing banks, he's doing bad stuff. So I mean, it makes sense. If you're just dropped into this episode, you're kind of like, man, like, Clark needs to lighten up a little bit. I'm like, no, because he's saying that because he has been on the other side of it, where you can go too far, and it has to be frustrating for Clark. He's like, man, if this kid would only listen to me. But Bart's gonna do what Bart's gonna do.
Yeah, so he's going to storm off, and Clark's like, well, I guess I'll just go draw that map now. So he goes to Luther Mansion.
he just goes
to what he was going to do, right? He's just like, well, okay, he's gone.
Here's the funny thing to me. It's like, Clark, you know, you and Lex were supposed to meet up in the morning anyway. You know?
Could you not have waited? Yeah.
He could have, because it's not like he's going to find this thing today, even if he draws it today.
His concern is, like, I guess he wants to be able to look at it and draw it at the same time, I guess. I guess he doesn't trust his memory. But, like, look, this is your best friend, right? Just keep going over there, all right, over a course of time. I'm sure you can remember enough to draw the map. But totally, he could wait. He could, as usual, Clark could have planned things better, right?
Well, couldn't he just super draw it, too? I mean, just, like, you know, do it super fast, put it in his pocket, you know what I mean? Just,
that's a good point. Is that, like, its own power? I don't know.
You would think so. So, I mean, this is what happens when you watch things in retrospect, because,
right, totally.
You know, you're going to find those little things. You're like, wait a minute. He couldn't have just waited till the next morning and just played it cool. And Lex wouldn't have really known, you know, or would he? Who knows?
Because, unfortunately, Clark is the victim of the worst timing ever, because he goes to Lex's, you know, in the middle of the night, right? And he's looking at the map. He's doing his x-ray thing, or about to. And then we see the super speed of Bart swoop in. The map is gone. Alarms are going off, because Lex had established earlier, like, oh, don't, because Clark was going to touch it. He's like, hey, don't touch that. And I got state-of-the-art alarms on this, right? And we've heard that before from Lex, but this time he wasn't joking, because the whole building goes on lockdown, right?
Yeah, and I was like, dang, man, he really is a joke. Like, that's some state-of-the-art security. I was like, where'd you get that? That's not, it's funny, because one of the sponsors of Rosenbaum's podcast is ADT, and I keep on waiting for him to go, you know, if only Lex had ADT on Smallville, maybe he wouldn't have, you know, gotten someone's stolen, but you know.
that's a great tie-in right there. Yeah.
That's all I thought of when I rewatched the episode yesterday. I was like, wait, one of the sponsors of Michael's podcast is ADT now. I think that's kind of funny. He said state-of-the-art security, and then now it's all full circle for him too.
For as many times as the Luther Mansion got broken into or stuff stolen from, absolutely right. But Clark, it doesn't look good for Clark, right? Because he basically, although he didn't steal it, he might as well have, as far as Lex is concerned. And Clark has to come up with something. And he's like, well, I wanted to come and say hi. And he's like, it's a little late for a social call. Lex totally knows that he's BSing you, right? And he's like, so you're telling me you didn't take it and you don't know who did? And Clark says no. And this is a very important line here. Lex says, I know a real friend would never lie to me. And you're like, ooh.
Yeah. That stung too. I remember he's like, I believe you, Clark, because I know a real friend wouldn't lie to me. And you're like, oh man. And he did it on all his Rosenbaumness, you know? And I'm like, damn, man. Like I said, you keep seeing the rift between the two, and the wedge is going further and further. And this did not help at all.
Well, this is the kind of BS. This is why they can never stay friends, right? Because they each, mm-hmm. Clark knows something about it. Lex knows that he knows, but he's not telling him. There's so much distrust built up between them now. It's unfortunate, but this is why it will never work between them. So
it really is just like a tragic tale, you know, between the two. And, you know, we've talked about this before, and we, you know, and I always bring it up to people. I'm like, man, I'm telling you, if you would have just said, hey, this is what's going on, I think it would have been cool. You know, they could have been friends forever, but let's not bring that up, even though
it's the point. We've gone past the point of no return here.
Absolutely.
So, you know, again, Jonathan, poor old Jonathan, right? He calls Martha the towel, and we only see Martha's end of the conversation. She's like, I know, Jonathan, but I'm busy. I'll come home when I can. And she hangs up. I'm like, oh, poor Jonathan. He just wants to spend time with his family this episode, and he's not getting any time with his wife or son.
He's not getting any, man. I'm like, dang, it's cold. I was like, his heart's already hurting physically, but now, like, literally, like, man, you just like, whew. I was like, what you gonna do?
So this is a scene which I like to call the two Lanas are together, right? Because of course Annette O'Toole played Lana Lang in Superman 3 with Christopher Reeve. So it's always great to see when she has a scene with Christian Kreuk, because these are two characters who up to this point in the show barely interact and they don't get enough interaction. Well, of course, this is, I don't know how Lana knew to come at this time or whatever, but Martha's sort of crunching the numbers at the end of the day, and Lana's like, wow, you're really working late here. And Martha's like, I don't know how you did it, Lana. Of course, I don't know how she did it either. You know, being a high school student, run a freaking coffee shop. I don't know, John. I don't know I could have done that.
No, you know, I don't know either. But I know people that did stuff similar to that. You know, I mean, I had friends of mine. I mean, I was in high school, I was a three-sport athlete, and then other extracurricular activities. And I had friends who did the same amount of stuff I did with school-wise that also had like full-time jobs. I don't think anyone ran a coffee shop. But still, it's like, I'm sure, I don't know how she did it. You know, that's a great question. We should ask Al and Miles when we get face-to-face with them. Or let's ask Craig. So Craig Byrne, if you're listening.
The next best thing.
Craig probably knows more. I think Craig knows more than anyone at this point. If there's ever a Smallville season 11, Craig better be, maybe not the showrunner, but he better be a consulting producer.
Creative consultant. Absolutely.
Yeah. So Craig. How did Lana manage to do that while going to school? Maybe because she quit cheerleading. I don't know.
That was the key. You know how much time cheerleading takes? But anyway.
I actually do. Funny enough, it's a lot. That's a very demanding stress. I mean,
I don't slide at all. No, I was in marching band, so I know. Anything involved in football season, when you're part of that, it's its own thing. Totally. It's on, absolutely. Man. It's a full-time job.
That's the key. Okay, she quit cheerleading. So that's what she should have said. Like, hey, I quit cheerleading. But I was still cheerleading. I couldn't do it.
So Martha has quit her family to do it, apparently, which is kind of the crux of the problem here.
Martha
kind of confides in Lana. It's a nice moment between them, right? Because Martha's like, I'm just overwhelmed. And when I'm at home, I worry about Jonathan. And I didn't just take this job for the money. I took it to not think about worrying about him all the time. And so she's kind of having a midlife crisis of a kind here, you know? And Lana and her kind of have a moment. And she's like, well, look at yourself now. You're worried about him, but you're here. Your guys aren't together. He might as well be gone already. So it's a nice, like, somebody from outside of the situation comes in, shares some wisdom, you know, and they have a nice moment. I thought it was a nice moment between them.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, it's really, and it shows the growth of Lana as a person, where she's really just trying to come into her own sort of thing. And then, of course, Martha says, you spend a summer in Paris and you become all wise and powerful sort of thing. Because Martha basically says, we're thinking. It's like, wow, that's a really deep stuff he just gave Martha Kent. So that was kind of a cool thing to see where Lana's, you know, we're really seeing a lot of people's trajectories. And funny, that's a Flash. Isn't that a Flash villain trajectory? Yeah. So there we go. And we're seeing a lot of people's trajectories in terms of where they are going to be headed in the future. So that's, you know, hats off again to Steven S. DeKnight for very, very good writing.
Absolutely. So we get our next scene with the guys from the beginning of the episode, the criminals. Lex had mentioned to Clark that he's not worried about finding the artwork because he knows people in Metropolis. Only certain people can move a piece of art like that. The criminal underworld, as it were. And that makes sense, right? Because there's only so many people that are willing to buy and then sell a kind of artifact. It's a small demand for something like that. So so they show up and. Well, Bart shows up with them. It's kind of an entrapment thing for Bart here because he's gone back to the guys he knows who already have a grudge against him for stealing their stuff and their money earlier. Of course, they're the people that he brings the artifact from because they had told him that you need to step your game up. And he's like, this is adult enough for you? You know, he's like, oh, it's a good start. So this whole setup is here. And then they knock him out. They give him the old back of the gun against the back of the head. And Bart's knocked out. And that's when Lex comes in.
And it goes back to what Bart was saying earlier about why he does what he does. He says, you know, I'm asleep. I'm as slow as everybody else. And just like, if you come up to him, you know, from behind, you know, a knock to the head is going to knock him out just like anybody else. But one would think that he would recover from that a little quicker because he heals faster. But maybe he's not that kind of Flash.
He's going through puberty. You know, I mean, his body's still developing. I'll give it a
Smallville Flash. He's Smallville. The first time I hear it, Smallville, that's a Superman 3 reference. And it's a double meaning here. Because, you know, in Superman 3, when Richard Pryor's drinking with Brad, he's like, yeah. What'd they call you in high school? Brad? No, they call me the Smallville Flash. He's like, Smallville Flash. So that's all I think about.
Superman 3 is so underrated. I love that scene where he's like, both keys at the same time. I mean, it's generally funny.
Oh, dude. It's Superman 3 and the fact that it openly reference in Office Space is still two of the greatest things ever. So Zach, I'm going to propose this as a future thing. I think this would be a great thing for me, you, and Craig to do together. I have, and I'm totally going off subject, but it's kind of on subject. But I'm just proposing a future episode for something just completely, maybe our own version of Elseworlds for the podcast. I have a copy of, because you know how there's a TV cut there back then. There was TV cuts, theatrical cuts of movies like Superman in general. Yeah. Superman specifically, rather. I have the TV cut of Superman 3, and it is, there are scenes in there that are not on the DVDs that have been released at this point. Believe me, I've checked.
I have never seen that. I would be very interested in that, John. Absolutely.
There is, especially that scene where Richard Pryor's talking about how Superman saved the day. There's added content to that, and it makes no sense, but so much more sense if that makes if I'm I don't make any sense there, but it's that's something that I think me and Craig should sit down and watch together.
Oh, that'd be great, man. I think, you know, and that's something that I'm holding out hope for, you know, that of course they released the TV cut of Superman the movie last year and that was awesome. I'd never seen those scenes ever. But yeah, I would love to see the TV cut of Superman 2, Superman 3, you know, because in the 80s they did these expanded versions and then those scenes are just lost to time. So absolutely, man. I have
Superman 2 as well.
Right, okay, so, we'll talk after the podcast.
absolutely. Okay, but moving on. So
Bart is knocked out. Lex comes in, and this shows you that Lex is not like pure evil yet, you know, because he's just a kid. Let him go. You know, he sees the guy that the dangerous criminal that these guys told him about. But then they try to kind of like double cross him, and because he's going to call the cops and then et cetera, et cetera. So the guys the main dude sticks his heavy on him, right? It's good to see Lex kind of defend himself for a minute here, isn't it, John?
Yeah, it is. It is. He's like, dude, he's just a kid. What are you doing? Let him go. And that gives you a little bit of hope too, because up to this point we're seeing basically the wedge being driven further and further between him and Clark, which is safe for us to assume that he's going more towards the dark side, you know. So another Star Wars reference, and to see him go, dude, he's just a kid, let him go. You're like, oh, maybe there's some good left in him still, you know. Even though if we're diehard Superman fans like you and myself, we know ultimately where he's gonna go. I think that's a really good call to have that moment of he's not completely on that, you know, crossed over yet. So that's an important character trait, because, you know, really at the end of the day, Lex was just trying to do the right thing. you know, when you look back on it. And he, clearly he was trying to do the right thing.
I mean, everybody around him is like lying to him, lying to his face, you know, stealing from him. Like, I, you understand why Lex are not the way he did for sure. So,
oh, that would drive me nuts, man. I was like, hey, man, I wouldn't be able to make through season one. What you're doing, you wouldn't do seven. I know why you left.
Totally. So this guy, you know, he has a couple lines here, right? He, the criminal dude, he says, you have no idea what that freak's capable of. And that's such a Smallville line. Like, the, you have no idea what I'm capable of. That's a drinking game in of itself for Smallville. Lex gets into a fight with these guys. He gets knocked out. So we got a plus one for a knockout to keep Clark secret. Cause you know, Lex is out of it for the climax of the episode here. But then the main criminal guy, he pulls out a gun on Bart. He's like, let's see if you're faster than a speeding bullet. Because they had to say it, didn't they, John? They couldn't help themselves.
Yeah. I wouldn't be able to help myself either. And again, thank you, Stephen S. tonight, for bringing us these, you know, golden bits of dialogue, because that's all we really want. It's not so much the whole thing has to be over-the-top comic booky, but it's just like, give us a little bit. Give us something that you're acknowledging that this is the property we're working with. So that I enjoyed very much. And then all of a sudden, who's faster than a speeding bullet that comes in?
Superman.
I remember watching that at this episode. Again, October 2004 with my two brothers. And up to this point, usually Clark just knocks someone out. He might throw them. He threw this guy through the roof, like through the ceiling. I'm like, man, you must have pissed him off bad, because usually Superman.
Yeah, big. Yeah, through the roof into another car. Like, he was pissed, totally.
Yeah, like he threw him way up. Like, man, where did that guy land? And he just goes, "You don't want to be here." Yeah. Like, almost in like Oliver. It was like the pre Oliver, before Oliver.
You Queen have failed this city.
Like, you don't want to be here. And I was like, man. That guy, you pissed him off.
Well, I love it. I love it when Clark gets assertive like that. Totally, man. It's like, yeah, Superman's a tough guy. I like it when he's assertive.
But I just remember watching it. I'm like, he threw the guy through the roof. Like, that guy's probably still up there. Like, he threw him hard. It's like, you made him mad.
So Clark saves the day here, and you think, because he turns to Bart and he says, you still think this doesn't hurt anyone what you do? And you think, oh, Bart's learned his lesson here, right? But no, he hasn't. He pulls out the kryptonite on him, right? Which is a dark twist. I did not see that coming for the Flash. But this is a great scene here, because Clark has to tell him, look, this isn't who you are. You know, we're the same. You know, you don't want to do this. You're not a murderer. This will kill me. And Bart's like, you know, Clark, I wish that were true. You know, he feels bad about it, but he feels like he has no choice, and that's why he does this to Clark.
Yeah, absolutely. And but at the same time, he lets him... you know, but he doesn't let the kryptonite kill
him. Right, he does close the box and run off, so.
Yeah, which is, you know, and then you think all hope is lost at that point, because it's like, okay, well, he didn't let me die, but at the same time, it looks like he's just gonna, you know, use his powers not for great things.
And he took the artifact with him and ran off.
He did. But there is a payoff to that, isn't there, Zach?
There is a payoff. There is a payoff. That's not the last we see of Bart Allen here. But you know, we have a scene where Clark goes home. He's talking to Jonathan, and this is a great scene between the two of them, because I think it really shows you that Superman's problems are all of our problems, right? He tells his dad, you know, sometimes with all these secrets, I feel like I'm two separate people, right? And that's, of course, a Superman call forward to Clark and Superman. But I love what Jonathan says there. He's like, Clark, you know, you're going to find that normal people feel the same way, you know, because we all have the compartments of our lives where we have to be certain things. And that's just Clark growing up, not unique to being Superman, but just being human, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I think him knowing that there's others with that kind of dilemma was a piece of, you know, gave him a little peace of mind, especially come from his dad, you know, especially come from Jonathan. You know, that was an important scene for those two. And it's just like, at some point he'll, you know, he's going to have to come to terms with the dichotomy of, you know, these two kind of identities, but then he'll find the common denominator between the two as well. You know, it's not going to happen today or tomorrow. It probably actually won't happen until the end of season 10. but it's an important thing. That's an important Jonathan Kent bit of advice, you know, especially looking back in retrospect, I realized how important that moment was. For Clark to hear.
Absolutely. So he goes off to check on Lex, because Lex is, of course, you know, got beat up pretty bad. And Martha comes home, And he's like, oh, look who got home from work early. She's like, yeah, I promoted so-and-so to assistant manager, and I'm taking the day off to spend time with my husband. And he's like, well, you got a sweaty farmer in your driveway. And she's like, well, I'm going to go get a hose and a towel. I'm like, whoa, even the old people are thirsty in season four. You know what I'm saying, John?
Yeah.
I didn't expect the kids to talk this way.
Yeah, exactly. So it's this episode had a little bit of everything when you really think about it. It had, you know, the witty dialogue, you know, had awesome VFX, and also just it just had the right balance of humor and kind of drama, you know, and I just feel like the tone was very on point. And I wouldn't be surprised if this was a point of reference, you know, when the Arrowverse is being put together, you know, especially the Flash. I would be surprised if this wasn't at least brought up when they were first cocking the show.
Yeah, they should. It's like, okay, guys, you want to write for the Flash? Watch this first. We'll take it from there, right? You know, I think this scene here between them, though, it's like, you know what? It shows that they kind of like they were in some rocky ground and they've kind of rekindled some romance between them, and they're going to be okay. And that's why it's an important scene for the kids. And it's nice to have a scene just for them, you know, the two of them without the kids around, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you're looking back, I realize how rare that was. We didn't really get a lot of those Jonathan and Martha moments. So the fact that we got that this time around, again, like, we realize how important it is because, you know, we all know it's coming ultimately. And that moment right there was a pretty defining one.
Now, we talk about what a great episode this is, and there are a couple scenes that I'm not the biggest fan of, and we get back to our Jason and Lana scene. It just, the Jason and Lana stuff feels just so wedged in and unnecessary in this episode, I feel. You know, you could take those two scenes out, and the episode would be just the same, if not better.
I agree. That was the biggest thing for me, at least the first half of season four, until we really saw who Jason T was like, I feel like Lana was being sidelined on her own show, which I imagine she's maybe number three on the call sheet, if not number two.
Yeah,
you know, two. No, I think Rosenbaum would be number two. So she had to be one of the top five on the call sheet. She's being sidelined on her own show. Not unlike what's happening, you know, I'm not throwing shade at anybody, but on The Flash, like Iris is being sidelined on her own show, you know, but that's a whole other conversation. So, I mean, I agree with you there. I'm with you, but you know, it's the only reason it's like, but I do love Jensen Ackles as an actor and Kristen Kreuk. It's like those two are great.
I get like we were saying earlier, like we enjoy his goofball character. It's like, it's something new and different, but it just feels so disconnected. I think that's the biggest issue more than anything.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you could probably cut that whole subplot. I mean, maybe not the whole subplot, but in this episode.
Oh yeah, in this episode, you take those scenes out, just like in Crusade, you take their scenes out. It's like it's actually kind of a better episode. Sorry, without that kind of needless side plot. But she takes him down to the cave to kind of, because she even realizes that she's being like Clark, you know. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that's interesting. I think that's interesting for a position for her to be in. She's like, I didn't want to keep secrets like he did, so I'm experiencing this. I want you to experience it with me. I had to come back to Smallville because of this, and it's connected to these caves, and I don't know what's going on, but let's figure it out together. And Jason looks genuinely concerned, so I guess Jason Teague's just as good as actor as Jensen Ackles, huh, John?
Yeah, I guess so, you know what I mean? And, you know, what would have saved that whole scene, and I know hindsight's 20/20, but if some crazy twist of fate would have had Jason T going, man, it looks like we're going to some supernatural territory. Can you imagine? Or at least they should recut it, like redo the redo some ADR and just have, for whatever, it could be like a Mandela effect thing where we know what the real dialogue is, but future generations will be like, oh my God, they planned this from the beginning. He was going to have his own show. I mean, I'd be into that.
I wonder if anyone, not even him, but just any character says the word supernatural in seasons four. I'm going to keep my ears out for it.
That's a great Easter egg hunt. Like, does he ever say supernatural? Does anybody say anyone supernatural to him? Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So you know, that scene is what it is. And then we move on to Clark and Lex. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a plus one for this. This is a relatively new category I added, John, since last time you were on, a shut that laptop. All right. Because this is something that happens a lot in Smallville. When somebody walks in a room, somebody closes their laptop, you know. So we got a plus one for that. But we'll talk about that at the end.
That's where I got that from, I'm pretty sure.
Somebody comes in, you close the laptop.
I used to do the same thing, man. And
got that from Lex.
100%. That makes so much more sense now.
So Clark comes in, Lex closes it. We understand why he closes it in a minute, but he sees that he's okay. Everybody's good. You know, Lex Lex is like, yeah, I should have died. Clark says, someone must be looking out for you. Lex says, oh, it's a big time. Because they look over to the right, and the map is back. So it was returned to Lex, and so Bart had a change of heart, and Clark's happy about it. Lex is happy about it. Clark x-rays it, sees the map. He's happy about that. But then as Clark's about to leave, Lex says, oh, Clark, you know something else I found? I paid too much for it. It's a nice, like, funny moment. You think, oh, they're friends. They're going to be okay, right? It's a nice kind of alleviates the tension you feel in the scene. But then Clark leaves, and you realize that Lex also knows about the map under the map. On his laptop, he had his little graphic where they've done their own x-ray. And you're like, ah, they're both keeping secrets from each other again.
Yeah, and another important point to bring up here, Zach, is the map was brought back. We were led to believe that Bart just ran off with it. So he ultimately did the right thing and brought it back to his rightful owner. And so something that Clark said and did resonate with him. So I think, and the fact that they showed that through dialogue, they didn't have to show him actually putting the map back in the Luther Mansion. It's just like, there it is. Yeah, you wouldn't believe it. It's back here. And like, that's enough for people. And I think the unseen is just as powerful as being seen. And so that's that was really watching it with the eyes of a filmmaker now, because when I watched before, I wasn't in the industry, you know, and watching it now, I'm like, oh, wow, that's really on point directing, writing, you know, putting it together. That, yeah, you don't have to show that. It's just you just show it.
Yeah, it's tough when you're a storyteller. You're like, how much exposition do I have other characters communicate, and how much do we see without telling? Like, a show not tell, and then also, like, it's a tough balance to walk, and they made the right choices here, absolutely. So we have we have Clark, you know, he's drawing his map, which he wanted to do, right, from memory off of the farm. Mm-hmm. And then Bart speeds up. He's like, hey, your drawing sucks, which is so a character. It's so good, right?
And he's not wrong. I mean, it's like,
it's pretty bad, Clark.
You know, I guess you don't have super art skills to go along with your super speed, you know, and everything else, apparently.
Right. So, you know, this is a great moment. This is one of those iconic Smallville scenes. You know, if you ever see a Smallville montage of the show, you get clips of dialogue from this and then the final shots here. But, you know, Clark's happy that Bart had his change of heart. Bart does ask him how he found him. And he's like, oh, well, I took these MP3 players down to Suicide Slums and tried to find a buyer. And that's how they led me to your criminal friend. So that's cool. That's a question I didn't even think to ask. Like, how did Clark find those guys earlier? Right. The script has an answer for you. It's great. You know, and it's Clark doing some on the street investigative reporting stuff, which is great. More future foreshadowing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, there's really, it's a bulletproof script. You know, it really just is, you know, and like, just like how Superman's bulletproof. They really, there's no stone left unturned. And
no stone of power left unturned. Am I right?
Exactly. You are right. Always. especially since you are the host of this podcast, you are always right. No, but you are, you know, and I think not dumbing it down. It's just like, how, because that's something that he would ask. How'd you find me? Oh, I did this and this. He's like, I love, he's like, Clark Kent, you know, embracing the dark side, since I'm like bracing the dark side sort of thing. And then I'm going to leave this line to you, because this is another defining moment in Smallville. But also I think overall, the whole arc of the show, but also for the trajectory of the CW and the what led to the Arrowverse, is what Bart says before he leaves.
Right.
What, so he says to Clark.
He's going to leave, and Clark's like, I should stay. And Bart's like, no, I'm going to go out there, see if there's any other people out there like us, maybe start a club or a league or something. And you're like, oh!
Yeah, right? Like, I was freaking out when he said that. I was like, no way. Did he? Like, and then I'm thinking, are we going to get a Justice League? Like, what is going on here? So, I mean, it's still just as cool hearing it, you know, 14, 15 years later, you know, on the show as it was when I first heard it. And I think that's really cool.
And then the last line that he leaves Clark with is like, hey, thanks for being my friend. And you're like, man, that's, mm-hmm. that's get you in the feels too. You know, like that's a good, you really bought that these guys became friends over this episode.
And that they needed friends too, because, you know, being metahumans, being super is a lonely thing. You may have, you know, even though Pete Ross is technically Clark's best friend, you know, Lex is this, you know, it's just like you.
Clark has like Chloe, Pete, Lex, all these people who he says are his best friends from, but you're right. Someone they can truly relate to him.
Absolutely. So, I mean, them, like, that's like his crew. Well, should we say super friend?
Super friend.
Are we going to go there? We just did.
So then we get our final sequence here, which is, again, one of the most iconic sequences of the show.
As Rascal Flatts is slowly being faded
Rascal
in. So this
classic
scene.
Smallville, right? Got to pull up those Rascal
Feels
Flatts.
Like today was added onto my playlist after this episode. I don't know about you, but I didn't know who Rascal Flatts was before this episode of Smallville, but I did after this one.
I didn't know who a lot of bands were before Smallville, and then they quickly became my favorite bands
like
and songs.
Lifehouse,
right?
Like, Lifehouse became a staple of my iTunes. After, The Calling. Oh, my God. I mean, come on.
Totally, man. The soundtrack of my life, this show, man, became. But, absolutely. But, yeah, so Rascal Flatts kind of fades up, as you said, and Bart's like, hey, look, I'll make you a deal.
I'm doing it for you.
Yeah, thank you. If you catch me, I might think about staying.
Woke up this morning with this feeling inside.
When Clark chases after him, right? I'm just curious to see how many of the lyrics you know, John.
That's all I got.
Very good. So they start their super speed, and they're streak. You know, got the red streak and the blue streak, and they're going. You know, and then Bart does an impressive move. He turns around. He's still going at super speed. Gives Clark a little salute. Kicks in overdrive and just speeds into the distance, and then Clark's just left in the dust, and he's like, whoa, that guy's fast. You know, and then he pulls out, and that's how the episode ends, and it's a great ending to a great episode.
Absolutely, you know, and that was and who knows, he could have been going back to the future.
I'm not joking. I thought that was a thing too, because the Flash, if he runs at a certain speed, he can travel through time, as has been established in all the iterations. Like, because that was a whole new level of speed, and I thought, yeah, you know, if he would have never come back, you could have said, like, well, I guess he went back to the 25th century or something, wherever he's from, but, you know, you don't know, and they kept it vague
century.
Enough. 30, excuse me, yeah, excuse me. 30. So, like, they keep it all vague enough, right, where you can actually, you know, you can extrapolate what you want about this Flash and what he does, but I'm going to choose to look at it that way. John, I love your, he went to the Flash Museum, he got these IDs, he got the Flash decal from the Flash gift shop, and then he went back to the future at the end of this episode.
I think that's, you know, and I remember that being like a holy F moment, because he's running backwards. Clark still can't catch him. And then hits another gear. Like, whoa, we don't, like, Clark, and that's a thing for Clark. We're like, wow, I knew he was fast, but that's a different level that I'd never seen. And which causes him to stop his super speed. Just be like, well, I guess I'll just go back home. So I did want to give you, in lieu of Kyle being able to be on the podcast, which he's extremely sorry about, but he, you know, of course he had to take care of his wife, who is not feeling well. He did offer me some direct quotes that he wanted me to share on the podcast. He also wanted to say what's up to you, Zach, and that he sends his best.
All right, well, tell him what's up.
I will. And so I'm gonna read you a text that he sent me. It said, I love the show. It was a blast. It was one of the most important jobs in my young career, and still this day one of my favorite on-set experiences. I was really taken care of. They knew I was green and didn't really know my way around a set very well yet, and everybody helped me out. Rosenbaum also told me he was going to be my new dad because I was still a minor, so my mom had to be there with me. Ha ha ha, is what he said. And going on the final scene where he's having the race with Clark, he shared with me this bit of info, which Craig Byrne probably already knows, but for the rest of us, we probably didn't. He says, I actually almost got killed on that final shot where I outrun Clark because I had to run backwards on a treadmill while they pushed in on me with a crane. So I was running and then had to turn around, and I tripped and I fell forward, and the crane was coming towards my face, and I missed it by what felt like inches. Almost took my effing head off. And but if it wasn't the crane operator, I owe the crane operator my life, is what he's saying. So
wow,
for him... For Bart almost going back to the future, Kyle, we almost lost Kyle in real life, which is kind of crazy.
Wow. Well, that is scary stuff. I mean, we've all been on treadmills before. Like, if you miss your step on that, you know, you're in trouble, not to mention having a crane coming at you. So that's a scary story. So
yeah, and now they would do things differently, obviously. In season one of The Flash, of the Arrowverse Flash, they had Grant Gustin on a treadmill. And now what they just have him do, because VFX has gotten more advanced, they just have him move his arms really quickly. Yeah. So if that episode were filmed today, they would just basically have him do that on a green screen, and they could do the rest, which is kind of, it's crazy to see how far technology has come. Mm-hmm. But I'm also, Kyle, I'm glad you were not killed. Thank you to the crane operator. We're going to have to look up who the crane operator was on that episode, because that person is responsible for saving Kyle Gallner. And And all that being said, it blows my mind that he has not been brought back. Now, hopefully next season on one of the shows, but that he hasn't been brought back to the Arrowverse.
Well, as we know, the crisis on Infinite Earths is coming, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to get all these guys back.
So he has to.
Right? What is the point if they don't do that, right, John?
Yeah, they have to do that. They got to do the Brandon Routh Superman.
Absolutely.
You know?
I mean, they have Dean Cain, Superman. Bring them all. You have these guys. You got to bring them all back. You got to get Rosenbaum in the bald cap. You got to get Welling in a costume finally. You got to do all these things. That's what I need to see in the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Or it could be, I mean, Welling still won't wear the costume, and then they'll make a joke out of it. Like, oh, it's like, oh, my Earth, we're not into costumes, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah, Brandon Routh is going to show up in the costume, and Welling's going to say, you look ridiculous.
Exactly. So.
Well, hey man, that's awesome. Hey, thanks for sharing those. Thanks again for making the connection with Kyle. Look forward to talking to him in the future of the 31st century. Hopefully sooner than that.
He'll be able to come on. It's just you know, with the holidays and everything, and then and I told him, like, bro, take care of your wife, man. I mean, it's as much as I would love to have surprised Zach and have you on here, I would rather you live to see another day. You know, like you did after surviving Smallville, but I don't want your wife to kill you or kill me. So let's get him on a new one when we get to the next Justice League episode.
Yeah, no, I know how it is, man. Even when I do a podcast period with my girlfriend, it's like, okay, I got to set aside time for this. You know, the last thing you want to do is have somebody be sick. Like, oh, sorry, got to go do my podcast. So no, totally. Absolutely, man. So really, really appreciate you making that connection. And hey, Kyle, did great on the episode. Love you, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
He is. He's the real deal. And it's funny because Kyle and I have indirectly worked together on two movies. I helped put a movie together called Band of Robbers about 3 years ago, which technically is the first time Flash and Supergirl were on the same movie, because Melissa Benoist was in that film. And that was before she was testing for Supergirl while she was filming Band of Robbers. And then she got it while we were and then once the movie came out, I'm like, wait a minute, we had Flash and Supergirl in the same movie. Technically, we were the first one to do it, because this was before the episode in season one of Supergirl when Barry went and visited Earth 38, sort of thing. And right. And there's another movie that Kyle's doing. It's called Dinner in America, that's coming out sometime next year. And it's if you follow his Instagram, you'll see he had a kind of a crazy haircut going on. He's playing like this rock star, kind of this rocker sort of character. And I remember when I first read this script, because Ross Putman, one of the producers, is a buddy of mine. He had sent it over to us. And I'm like, thinking in my head, Kyle Gallner would be perfect for this lead character. And lo and behold, Kyle became the lead. So Dinner in America is going to be one of Kyle's next movies. He's got a lot of projects going, and hopefully many, many more. Hopefully the Arrowverse is next one.
So what are you going to do now?
I don't know. I mean, it's a big world. We got to check it out. See if there's anyone else out there like us. Maybe start like a club or a league or something. You know, you could come with me.
Or you could stay.
You have a great life, Clark, but it's not mine. I have no reason to stay in Smallville.
You have me.
Thanks for being my friend.
Are you sure there's nothing I can do to change your mind?
With this feeling inside me that I can't explain. Tell you what. If you can catch me, I'll think about it.
Run got an 8.8 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 4 out of 5. So I ask you, John, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Run?
You know, I'd love to give it a 10 out of 10, but given what we talked about with like the Jason Teague and Lana scenes that were kind of pointless, I'm gonna give it a 9.8. It's still like an A. It's still an A. But I mean, because you could, if they would have cut those scenes, it probably would have been a 10. But you know, when I look at the entire scope of pacing and relevance, I mean, those two scenes I feel like that was a network note that was given. Like, you have to put a scene with Jensen and Kristen in there. Doesn't make sense, but you got to put them in there.
I agree with you. I'm going to give it an A as well. That is what keeps it from being an A+. Yeah. Those Jason and Alana scenes. I mean, we're in alignment, brother. Totally. So A's for both of us for Run. You know, I was curious. Like, okay, this is the first time I've watched this episode in a while since the new Flash show came out. You know, it's been a while since I watched it. And I was like, how am I going to think about Smallville's Flash, right, after I've seen, like, a quote-unquote proper Flash television show, like, in its entirety? And I got to say, it holds up. You know, this is the great thing about these superheroes. There's plenty of room for different interpretations, and this interpretation is just as valid and just as good as any other one. So I'm happy to say that Run holds up after all these years, because it's always one of pretty much everyone's favorite episodes of Smallville. So I was happy that it was just as good as it was back in 04.
I agree with you 100%, you know, and it all comes down to writing and characters, you know, because the character Bart is somebody you kind of care about and you root for and also want to shake. Like, dude, what are you doing? You know, listen to him. He knows what he's talking about. And so you're really invested and you're right back into it as soon as, you know, you watch it again. And it's like the attitude he has. You love it. Like, man, this guy, I like this kid. Even he's kind of a dick, but I like him. You know?
So let's close it out with a tally board here. We have a few entries. We have a plus one for Chloe's unseen connections, because that's who found who had stolen Jonathan's credit cards, and that's how Clark traced Bart the first time. So that's 18 so far over the course of the show. We have a plus one for episode title said in episode with 27 so far. The word run was said many times. The best line, though, was with Lex. He says he's going to find that no one on Earth can run from Lex Luthor. So that was a great Lex Lyon there. That's why Run sticks out the most.
Yeah.
We have plus one for knockouts to keep Clark secret. That's 22 so far, because Lex got knocked out, so Clark could save the day at the end. We have a plus one for a season 4 shower scene. All right, so that's 5 so far. We are 5 episodes in. We have 5 shower scenes in season 4. So I'm very curious to see how many can get
tallied
up. I'm
going to rewatch season 4 now, man. And look how many shower scenes. You got me rethinking this whole thing.
And then finally, we have a plus one for you. Shut that laptop. As we were talking about it, as the habit you picked up from Lex Luthor, Judd. Lex closed his laptop when Clark came in at the end of the show. So that's 9 total so far. And this episode, actually, even though we had a great scene between Martha and Lana, you know, I think this episode is a Bechdel test fail.
I think so, too, because they're talking about Jonathan.
Yeah, so there you have it, guys. So there's the tally board. There it is. There's Run, one of the most iconic episodes in Smallville history. John, thank you so much for taking the time to get on. Reach out to Kyle Gallagher. Look forward to talking to you both more about The Flash on Smallville in the future. But until then, man, when can people find you? Where can people find you online out there?
When in the future, you know, in the future with Bart Allen in the 31st century, with me, Bart Allen, and the Legion is where you'll find me. You can just find me at John Lee Brody, John with half the H, so JonLeeBrody on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Find me on there, hit me up. I mean, Zach and I met on Twitter, thanks to Craig, basically, and yeah, where can they find you, Zach, is more importantly.
Well, you can find me on Twitter personally at MoronZach. That's MoreOnZach. I'm also the host of another podcast, Standard Orbit, on the Trek FM podcast network that you have been on.
I've boldly gone on that podcast.
Yeah, you can find us on Twitter at Trek FM. And then for the podcast itself, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with 1S. Find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. You can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with 1S. All right, well, that's going to do it for us this week. But we'll be back next time talking about Transference, one of the all-time greats.
Somebody save me. And the outro. Oh, no, what was the outro on the end card? Do,
da, 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 da.
And then that. And that's how we go out.
Feels like today.